12 Pacifico. Bill Hendry.
We've got some pretty big problems here. We need some pretty big solutions. You know, I think it was Einstein who said that insanity is doing the wrong thing over and over.
And he traveled down to Port-au-Prince.
Do you think you represent Italian Americans in a positive light?
I think it's a shame that people are focusing on this.
More than a million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. during 2006.
That's very tough to swallow.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The world famous Phil Hendry Show where every night we take you through the looking glass, the Alice in Wonderland of talk radio and media, through the news, through media, maybe through the things you believe yourself. Truth is our bitch on this show. Let me tell you what. And also you can see our live streaming video and you can listen to our live streaming audio at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. That's where you can go for our archives. That's where you can go for our archived television programs and video and TV pilots that we've done that never made it to the air. So you'll be the first person to see it, maybe the last. And also you can look at our five-day video archive. You can listen to our audio archive. It's a great place, great resource for Phil Hendry fans, a great place to go to figure a little bit more out about our radio show, because I got news for you. If you think you got the show figured out in 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, forget it, man. It isn't going to happen. All right. We're bringing on the show tonight a couple of guests that we actually had on last week, but we have decided to bring them back because there's been a little bit of a controversy erupting in the environs there of Western Estates, California. They are the president and the secretary, vice president of the Western Estates Homeowners Association, Bobby and Steve Dooley. Bobby, how are you tonight?
We're doing good, Phil. As well as can be expected, I guess.
And what happened and what has caused this this controversy? I know that there have been some pretty harsh words spoken, and there have been some people. I think was the L.A. County Sheriff up there?
You know, we don't want to comment on that. The attorney for our Homeowners Association has asked us not to comment on that.
All right. Well, tell me, in essence, what's happened.
Well, I don't know whether my husband Steve is here. But my husband and I decided to paint our home. This was two weekends ago. We decided to paint our home the color blood red. The reason for that is my husband felt, because we're very eclectic people.
You painted your home blood red.
That is correct.
And I'm trying to feature what that is, Bob. I know what it looks like. It's kind of a lighter and a brighter red, I guess, huh?
It's a very distinctive color. I think it's different from a burgundy. Obviously, it's different from... it's a blood red, is the best way that I can put it. And we have a red tile Spanish roof. But my husband and I are both very eclectic. We're extremely artistic. We're very edgy people. We're very witted. We communicate with younger people much easier, I think, than most people our age. And we just felt that we wanted to make a statement about the defeat of health care in the United States Congress. What could our statement be beyond just protesting weakly and feebly like so many people? We wanted to make a statement, and that was our statement. And my husband felt it would be an appropriate statement.
All right, but that wasn't the end of it. You painted your home blood red 2 weekends ago, which would put it, I don't know what the date would have been.
Well, it was around the 16th, I think, Steve.
Yeah, around the 16th or the 18th, I forget.
Around the 16th or the 18th.
All right. Then what happened?
Well, then we had a call from a guy named Jim Carlisle and his wife, Carolyn, and both of them asked us about the color. And we said we have made an executive decision to protest the health care bill. They pointed out to us that the CC&Rs, which are our homeowners, our homeowners association rules, I'm very nervous.
You're doing fine.
Prohibited that kind of stark color. There was a code of colors that you could use. And I said to him at that time, I thanked him for pointing that out. I had overlooked that. But my husband told me to tell him that because I'm the Homeowners Association president, we do make an executive decision to paint our home blood red. He asked why. I said to protest the defeat of the health care bill. He seemed satisfied. The next morning, Carolyn calls his wife because he's at work. My husband noted that now the wife is calling because my husband felt it was because the husband, Jim, had lost his nerve. Now Carolyn's calling. And
well, or he might have been at work, but go ahead.
Well, all right. And she said, why can we paint our home a color we want? And I said, no, unfortunately, Carolyn, you can't. I am the Homeowners Association president, and this is an executive decision that I've made. She hung up. Later on that night, her husband called back and said he wanted to clarify that we painted our home blood red. I said, yes. He said, to protest some political point of view. I said, yes, technically to protest the defeat of health care. He said, but you told my wife we can't paint our home any color we want. I said, no, unfortunately, I'm the Homeowners Association president. I've made an executive decision. That's when he said to me, well, that is effing bull F. And I really thought I was going to pass out. I told my husband I had to sit down. I have a very weak heart as it is, so I suffer from a palpitation. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he said effing bull F.
So he swore. He swore at you.
I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I was stunned. Now, we don't allow the delivery of newspapers here to our gated community because we feel it's information overload. Jim went out and got a newspaper and was reading up on the health care bill, etc. But he came back and he said, well, unless, you know, you allow home delivery of newspapers and loosen some things up around here, that's when the sheriff was called.
Yeah, the sheriff.
So you had a visit from the L.A. County Sheriff. Why?
Because we do not allow the home delivery of newspapers. And Jim said that's the last straw, us painting our house blood red without allowing him. We just want to say, Phil, that it really takes a lot of gall for people to move into a gated community, to say they understand the CCNRs, and then give me attitude when I've made an executive decision. And then, after accepting the fact that I don't allow the delivery of newspapers here, make an issue out of that until we have to call the police.
And who called the police?
Well, we did. We called the police because we felt Jim was a threat.
And why did you say that?
Why did I?
Why did you think he was a threat?
Well, I hope God was trying to get my wife off and pull
that. Because he used that vulgarity with me.
So you felt that because the man got angry and used some vulgarity, some obscenity, not obscenity, but profanity with you, that was, or obscenity, I should say, that was enough to call the police?
Yes, Phil, in our mind. I don't know if you have a family. I don't know if you have a wife. But yes, my husband was protecting me from a lunatic who went, F word.
All right, I want to ask you a question here, Bobby. You're the Homeowners Association president at Western Estates, and I don't know what that goes with, but if you have rules and regulations, and I'm familiar with this because I've lived in these communities where you have a code that says you can only paint your house a certain color, and you can only do this and do that.
Well, I don't know how long ago you lived in one.
It's been a while.
All right. I don't know if that makes you conversant.
Well, am I wrong? Is that what you have?
Yes, we have that, but you... Please don't make it sound like you know all about it.
Yeah, she hadn't lived in one a long time.
No, I'm not saying that I know all about it. I'm just saying that you do have a code in there that says you only can paint your houses a certain color, right?
That is correct, Phil, yes. But...
all right, but please allow me, if just indulge me. You went ahead and painted your house blood red to protest the defeat of the health care bill, which I certainly understand the symbolism, and yet you know that there is a CCNR against this kind of color, these arbitrary paint jobs. So when the man called, you said, oh, yeah, that's right, but it doesn't apply to me.
That's correct, because I'm the Homeowners Association president.
But I made an executive decision. I said that my wife made an executive decision on that.
I made an executive decision. That's correct.
Okay, which means you get to paint your house any color you want, but the other people in the neighborhood don't.
It means the other people can apply to us as to what color they want.
Well, who do you apply to? Just you?
I'm the Homeowners Association. Phil, please don't make it sound like I'm just some dictator. I'm the homeowner.
Well, you also said that you have prohibited the delivery of newspapers to your community because it's information overload.
Exactly. And this man, Jim Carlisle, went, Steve said he went monkey and...
Chimp.
He went chimp because he suddenly said there's all these rules that he doesn't like. And that's when he called up and said, it's effing this, and I called the police. Now, the reason why we don't allow newspapers is for that very reason. You get this information overload, you start reading up on protests, and you see where there are people causing problems, and you get ideas in your little head, and the next thing you know, you're Jim Carlisle.
Yeah, you turn into Jim Carlisle, and you want to paint a house blood red, so that's what
you do. Exactly. You turn into Jim Carlisle, and you want to paint your house blood red. And that's something we get to do. But Jim knows what needs to be done. And I don't even know why you're asking. I'm not clear on your question.
Well, I think my question's been answered. Thank you. Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So they've got a problem out there. And that is that Bobby painted her house blood red to protest the defeat of the health care bill, but they don't allow anybody else to paint their houses any color because, well, they're the presidents of the Homeowners Association. They get to do what they want to do. All right, our number 877-876-PHIL. You can call up and let Bobby and I know what you think about the situation she finds herself in. 877-876-PHIL. We have her husband Steve on the line as well. And the other thing that I thought I heard her say, they don't allow the delivery of newspapers at their gated community as well because of information overload. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. For an 8-year-old child to learn how to fire a machine gun unless he's living in Somalia, in which case, you know, line him up, man. The shooting range open in Massachusetts. Phil with Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association, where you painted your home blood red. I understand that. It's an extreme color to protest the defeat of health care legislation. I wanted to ask you, before we get to some phone calls here, Bobby, what do people do in your community to show their support, say, for the defeat of health care? They're not allowed to paint their houses these colors. Only you do, because you've said you have that right as the Homeowners Association president.
What is your question?
My question is, what do people do if they happen to support the defeat of health care?
Well, if they support the defeat of health care, they had their protest. They voted for John McCain. You know, Phil...
Why do you dictate to people these things like no newspaper delivery?
People crave it.
You told me, hold on for a minute, you told me that you limit the bandwidth that you allow people on the Internet to keep certain websites.
People crave, Phil, that kind of security. I have found people want order. Those that cause problems, they move. If someone causes a problem and they don't move, we tell them that I have executive power. They're generally going to call up and use curse words. We can certainly record that, and we can make them famous on YouTube.
But I'm asking you to be reasonable. What gives you the right to paint your house blood red to protest the defeat of health care and not allow anybody else to do the same thing?
I'm the Homeowners Association president, Phil. It is an executive decision. It is enough for me. It's just a statement that Steve and I are making. Why does everybody have to monkey see, monkey do?
Everyone's following, copying us.
Why does everybody copy us? Why can't they just be happy with the way their homes are painted?
Why can't you be happy with the way your home is painted? Or does it have something to do with the fact that you're the Homeowners Association president and limiting the delivery of newspapers, limiting bandwidth, So you control the flow of information into and out of this homeowners association. It seems to me like you and your husband are the only ones that have any real freedom there. Here is Josh. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Bobby Dooley. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was just calling. I think, ma'am, with all due respect to you, I think that you're just being too dictating. I mean, I don't care if you're the president of any type of organization. You don't have the right to tell people what they can and cannot do. I don't care if you are the president of the Homeowners Association or what have you.
Well, they signed an agreement. They signed an agreement saying that they would abide by our CC&Rs, you know.
Well, you did too, as the president.
But because I'm the president, I have made an executive decision to paint our home blood red.
Yeah, but isn't the president of any organization supposed to set the example for everybody else instead of overpowering them, telling what they can and cannot do? I mean, who died and left you to
in
be God?
Theory.
I mean, it doesn't make no difference.
Well, in theory it is, but we've got, well, in theory, but because of the new sort of burgeoning middle class, you've got a lot of people that can afford to live here, but they're mostly, how do I say, a lot of them are blue collar. They don't really understand the finer thing. We were to allow them to paint their home any color, God help us. God have mercy on us, in fact.
What do you mean blue collar? You're saying what?
Well, a lot of them, you know, are truck drivers, this kind of thing, which I have nothing against. But I have to limit what they read and what they hear. I don't need them getting upset. We certainly don't need them coming around to my house and gibbering on about something. So I tell them, look, I'm going to paint my house blood red, and they'll say why, and I'll say because of this. You don't get to. The only one that made a big deal was Jim Carlisle.
The only one, huh? I tell you, if I'd lived there, that'd make two of us. It'd be me and Jim.
Well, then you could call up and call me well, there'd be three of you calling me an effing you-know-what.
I wouldn't use
vulgarity. I ain't calling you a nasty word like that. I just think you're being one-sided and hypocritical, and it's ridiculous.
He called me an effing whore.
Oh, well, that's uncalled for.
Yeah.
Most definitely, that's uncalled for, but that still doesn't give you the right to dominate anybody, no matter if you are the president of any type of organization. I mean, you're just being overbearing and stuff. You're just wanting to control everybody in that whole organization,
Josh,
that whole gated community, and it's not right. I mean, there's rules and regulations.
Do you think there should be, let me ask you, do you think there should be home delivery of newspapers? I mean, that's ridiculous.
I have no problem with home delivery of newspapers. If that's what a person wants, if they want to read up on current affairs in the newspaper, more power to them.
What's wrong with that?
What are you guys talking about? Why? It is unnecessary to get people riled up.
And what is with this limiting the bandwidth?
I don't need those people going to different websites and getting riled up and stirred up.
Do you watch the news?
Like a bunch of animals. But you do agree with me that... Oh, yeah, of course we do, yes.
Oh,
okay,
you do?
So you watch the news and you hear all this... stuff that's going on in the world, doesn't that clutter your mind, so to say, just like the newspaper? So how can you, if you're doing something, how can you expect somebody else in that organization not to when you're doing the same thing? And you're supposed to be the leader of that organization.
I can handle it.
What makes you think that you can handle the things other than what, handle more things than anybody else? You're human just like I am or anybody else is. Doesn't mean he's a super powerful god or anything like that who can't handle
I'm only saying in comparison to the people that live here, in comparison to the other people that live here, you know, to use the word, yes, I am godlike. I don't think I'm God, but I'm godlike.
Hold on for a minute. You're godlike.
I can watch Fox News and not get propagandized by it. Other people watch it and they want to join the Tea Party. That's the difference. I can watch Bill O'Reilly and laugh. Other people watch Glenn Beck and say, oh, I want to do what he just said. You see what I mean? And so that's why we limit the bandwidth.
No, I think what I hear here is that you like to control everybody and you think that you're above everybody else.
You don't like that a woman's in charge, is that it? You don't like that a woman's in charge? Does that bother
you? I have no problem with women.
I'm a female. You do have a problem with that, don't you?
No, he just said that he doesn't.
No,
he
I do
does,
not.
Doesn't he?
No, he doesn't. He said that he doesn't.
Which means that he does.
No, it doesn't mean that if he said no, it doesn't.
With all due respect, man, don't be twisting my words and say that I said something, because you're not going to overpower me, ma'am, for the plain simple fact that I have a mind of my own. I don't need you to control my mind.
Well, that's what people who live here say. But I've found that it's code, isn't it, for you're a whore?
Phil Henry.
Ow.
You like it.
Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association. The number is 877-876-PHIL. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to get off this, Bobby. You made the statement that you're not God, but you're God-like.
Well, Phil, that way you're taking it out of context.
She said she was God-like when it came to making decisions there. Now, you know, you can call yourself anything you want, but the fact is, you painted your home blood red to protest the defeat of the health care bill. You won't let anybody else in the neighborhood paint their house any color because that goes against the rules. But you go against the rules saying, as the president, you're allowed to do that. Why did you say you think you're God-like?
I never really said that I was God-like.
Yes, you did, and I can play the tape back.
What I said was that many people look up to me as if I'm God. And no, I don't think I'm God. But
why? Why do you say that?
Phil, it can be something as simple as this. You can look at the way that I dress. You can look at the way the other women in the community dress, okay? I walk outside in the morning. I'm put together. You see a lot of women going out there. If you want to know why that we have banned the delivery of newspapers to our community, one of the reasons is that a lot of women will go out there and get the paper in their sweatpants with the...
the rear end all bagged down.
With the rear end bagged down on them. What's the line that you like, Steve, from that movie?
Almost no ass at all, and that bothers me.
I love it. Steve loves that movie. It's called...
Carnal Knowledge.
Almost no ass at all, and that bothered me. You know that one, Phil?
I know the movie, yeah. What are you talking? You're telling me that the women, they're coming out to get their newspapers in their sweatpants, and they got no ass because the sweatpants are bagging down?
Because of the lack of presentation. You know, the defeat of health care angered me. It angered Steve. Our home was painted blood red in solidarity with all who supported health care. Now, we have a home that can be seen from the gate. It is blood red, and it will remain that way for 30 days.
And anybody that was in favor of the defeat of health care can't paint their house any color.
You're really making a big deal out of nothing.
You had the cops over there because some guy called you an effing something and said it was effing bull S and all this other stuff, and you said that you were quite frightened, so it really is a big deal, all right?
Well, but I don't think I'm J.C. on the cross.
Yeah, it's a big ball of J.C.
Steve calls me J.C. now as a joke because everyone thinks that I'm J.C. right off the cross. And I don't think I am.
Ms. Dooley, you may not think that you are. You may not say that you think you are. But a lot of the stuff you're saying, I can see how your neighbors think otherwise. 877-877-8776. Phil, here is Kenny in San Antonio. Kenny, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, Kenny.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Fine, sir.
Okay, I got a question. Ma'am, how did you become the Homeowners Association president?
Mm-hmm.
Are you elected?
Yes, I am.
I don't figure you're going to keep your position long. And secondly, how are the rules made? Are the rules, are they not, is it a... Are you going to let me speak, or are you going to keep trying to interrupt me every time I try to talk? Okay,
I'm not interrupting you. I'm listening to you.
Okay. how are the rules decided?
Don't you have your thoughts? You know what it is that you want to say, right?
What do I want to say? I want to know. Well, I want to ask questions.
Okay.
I want to know if
well,
you can
I'm,
answer the question.
Right.
How are the rules decided to mm-hmm. live in your association?
What? How are the rules decided to live in our association? Well, you buy a home here, and you automatically become a member of the homeowners
association. The rules that are in place, how were they decided?
Oh, those were drawn up by our homeowners association when the community was open. That was in 1996. And, of course, they've been amended, and they can be amended by a two-thirds majority of our homeowner council, but I do have veto power.
All right, you have veto power.
Is she elected?
Can they override? I want to ask a question here, though, Kenny. Can they override your veto?
Technically they can, but no one's really tried.
Man, okay. So, how many people live in your association?
What do you mean no one's going to try that?
No one's going to try and override a veto that... I don't understand your question.
You have veto power, but no one's going to try and override it.
I don't think anyone's got... I mean, no one's...
Nobody's got enough sense to override her there.
Well, no one would really dare go up against what I've been able to build here and what I've done. They know. I don't... You know, you're making it sound like I'm a dictator or something.
You are, ma'am. Well, I'm sorry. Staying plain and simple. There's no two ways about it. I live in a free America, and trust me, you are a dictator.
Well, no, I'm not. A dictator was Adolf Hitler, and I don't do that. I simply say to people...
You just made rules for everybody else but that you don't have to follow. Even though it is an executive decision, as you say, you still made rules that everybody else has to follow except you. You get to listen to all the information overload that you want, but you won't allow anybody else to. That is the basis for a dictatorship, ma'am.
Kenny, just because you watch an episode of the Sean Beck Show doesn't mean you know what a dictator am or what it is.
Who's Sean Beck?
I think you were referring to Bill Beck.
You watch Bill Beck, right? And you think you know what a dictator are?
What a dictator are?
I learned what a dictatorship was way back when I was in second or third grade. Yeah, Bill Beck.
Well, I know that you watch the Bill Beck Show, though, don't you?
That's got nothing to do with it. We all know what a dictator is. You just mentioned Adolf Hitler. That guy was around before Bill Beck or whoever it is you're talking about. So we know what a dictator is.
Do I put people in ovens and turn them into soap? No. Do I slave labor from Poland? No.
Oh, come on. You know what I'm saying. You won't let them... they can't deliver newspapers. They can't... All right. The bandwidth.
She won't let them on the Internet to get the information because she's scared of the information.
Mm-hmm.
Because once people have information, they become dangerous. That is
we can't let them have certain kinds of information. How do you explain this?
I
cannot allow people to have... I could... Kenny, if you lived in our community, you know I couldn't have... allow you to have certain information. It would be dangerous in your hands.
I am very dangerous because I am educated. Yes.
But I will say
that is a problem
educated.
For you.
Well, then why would you, if you're educated, why do you have to have more bandwidth? But I've allowed two Jews to own homes here, so don't call me a Nazi.
You've allowed two Jews to live there. Well, that's fantastic.
Would Hitler
allow
that?
Okay.
Hitler has nothing to do with this conversation, man.
You called me Hitler.
No, we didn't call you
Hitler. You did that, not me. I think you were a dictator. And that is exactly what you're doing because you're limiting information.
I painted my home.
You're controlling people's lives. You're getting the result that you want, regardless of the means. Am I wrong here? Regardless of the means, you're getting
You are wrong. Yes, you are wrong. We allow freedom of speech. Of course we do. This is America. I'm just saying that I had an impulse to paint my home blood red. Big deal. What color are you going to paint your home if you support the defeat of healthcare? There's no real color.
Well,
so, and I thought, I thought blood red would represent what, you know, what the Republicans have done. World Jewry has nothing to do with this. And
World what?
Jewry.
Yeah, the you know, we don't call her a Jewess, the lady that lives down the street.
You know something? I want to get off the Hitler thing, okay? And the Jewess and the Jewry and all that stuff.
See, listen to him laughing like you remember the SS.
Know where it is.
Listen to you laughing like you're watching them going into the oven.
God almighty, you're crazy. You are out of your mind, you know that?
This man was laughing like he was a member of the Hitler Youth.
I may not want to live there, but I'd really like to come up there on the weekend and sit around a campfire and smoke a big old fat one with them and sing Kumbaya like they must do every weekend. Because
sit around a campfire, do I look like I go to the campgrounds and buy one of those funny little Indian necklaces? Excuse me.
All right.
I appreciate your call, Kenny. One of the things that I don't like, Bobby, was the whole Jewish thing.
That was Steve.
I was only kidding.
No, you weren't kidding. And all this stuff about Hitler. Nobody's saying that you're Hitler. What I'm saying is, just as that other gentleman was trying to point out, you are controlling information when you don't allow a certain width of, you know, bandwidth, and you are controlling information if you don't allow newspapers to be delivered.
I told you we allow two Jews to live here.
Well, all right. Is that the quota?
What's the quota this month, Steve? I think it's...
877, thank you very much. 877.
You hung up on her.
But don't you think I know, Bud, when I hang up on people? 877-876-Phil, what?
You're up on line three.
Ms. Dooley, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
You know, you let the record show that you hung up on me. Let the record also show that you'll be enjoying yourself rolling around on the Legion skillet.
Okay, 877-876-Phil. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
What does that mean? Okay, you don't get it?
No, I don't.
Phil Hendry.
All right, Mr. Stephen Bozell joins us on the line here from Corona, California. Yes, sir, how are you?
Well, I've been better, Phil, I can tell you that. I wanted to ask you and get your opinion on the recent story that had come from Cuba, and I think it was today. And because of the situation that I've gotten myself into, and I think that this friend of mine had got me into.
Did you talk to my producer, Bud Dickman?
I did, and I gave him a little bit of the background.
Now, what is the story from Cuba?
The story was that apparently today the announcement was made that Cuba has authorized... Where's the article? Candy, honey, where's the article? Cuba has authorized sex change operations and will offer them free for qualifying citizens, an official said on Friday.
Let me look for that right now. As a matter of fact, I've got the website. Here's Breitbart. Cuba approves free sex change operations. Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Out of Havana? You read it. And the move is the latest in a series of changes implemented by President Raul Castro since he succeeded his elder brother. What was the... What is your concern with this?
Today, I was... you know, getting into my truck, I have a construction concern in Corona, California.
Can I ask you just one very quickly? I can hear, and Bud put here, Steve at his pond in Corona. Are you at a pond?
Yeah, I'm at the pond, is what I call it.
At your pond?
I'm at my pond, yeah. It's in the north area of my property. I've got 10 acres in Corona, and I've come here just to think when I've had any kind of a crisis or I just need to clear my head.
Oh, okay, because I was hearing all that. I can hear, are there squirrels out there?
We've got a lot of wildlife. We border the Anacheague range, so we've got squirrel life. We do have squirrel life. We have, and you can hear a duck.
Okay. Sounds very pleasant.
It is. It helps clear my head when I can just be here with these creatures, you know. But the squirrel life is very thick here.
Okay, so go ahead. When you said the squirrel life is thick, dumb squirrels?
No. I mean, it's lush.
Okay. So, tell me about this story. Cuba approves free sex change operations.
So, the article I was not aware of, and I was getting in my truck this morning. I had just left the house. I was getting in my truck. My next-door neighbor is a man by the name of Roy Hutchins, and I have named him, at least in the preliminary action that we have filed.
So there is some kind of civil litigation going on?
Yes, sir. I thought that I had mentioned that to the man that answers the telephone there, that I am planning on a civil, you know, civil lawsuit to try to redress my grievances.
All right, tell me what happened here, sir.
What happened, I'm getting into my truck this morning, and this gentleman, Mr. Hutchins, came over and said the following, and I took notes. It happened at about, was 8:27. Mandy, is that what it is, honey? My daughter, it was 8:27 this morning, honey? My daughter says it's 8:27 on the notes. And he said, hey, Steve, did you read this? Cuba has approved free sex change operations. And he arched the right eyebrow arched up, and then turned and went back over to his truck. He works as an electrician. I work as a construction contractor, and I have used him as a sub from time to time.
This man's a friend of yours.
Yeah.
All right, what did he do?
Well, what did he do? Sorry that I got to explain it to you, but the man came over and looked at me. Said, hey, Steve, did you hear Cuba approves free sex change operations, and then arched his eyebrow. So you got to understand something. It's very subtle, Mr. Henry.
Have you had some contention with this man?
Oh, yeah. He has done things tried to infer that the zucchini my wife was growing in the backyard, or no, the zucchini he's growing is bigger, and he tried to make, you know, sexual comments about that.
But I don't understand what he did, sir. So he came over.
He came over. He said, "Hey, did you hear? Cuba's approved free sex change operations." And the inference is obvious to anybody that he's looking at me like I should go down to Cuba and go ahead and get one installed.
You took that to mean that he thinks you should go to Cuba and do what?
To get a female part installed.
To have a sex change operation.
Yes, sir. And of course, it took me by surprise, and I was in the truck at the time, and I just turned the engine was on, and I turned the engine off, and I remember leaning against the wheel, and my head hit the horn, and my wife came out and wondered what was going on, and I explained it to her. And the one person in your life, I guess, where you expect, excuse me.
Do you need to take a little moment here?
I'll be all right. The one person in your life you expect will back you up 100%. And she looked at me and she laughed and blew it off, and just blew it off.
Well, what do you think is the nefarious? You're saying that this man...
The man comes over and says, hey, Steve. Like, in other words, he's saying to me, this is great news for you. Hey, Steve, why would I be interested in Cuba approving free sex change operations?
Oh, I don't know. And obviously, maybe not. Maybe he was trying to make a joke there, but you sound pretty busted up over this.
I have to tell you, Mr. Henry, I wouldn't mind it if a guy came right up to my face and said, you know what, you look like some kind of a pansy that ought to be a woman, and I can laugh that off. Or if he came up to me and said, I think you're, you know, F, and I don't want to use the F word. Okay, I could laugh that off, but when a guy is trying to be, you know, cute and sort of trying to, you know, squeeze it through like that, and
you mean be subtle?
Yeah, when he's trying to be subtle, and you don't know which way he's leaning, and you're worried. Okay, what are you saying? And the next thing you know, he turns and goes to his truck, and I'm left there like just a heap, leaning against the horn on my truck. I woke up my daughter. And the cat was sleeping, and that jumped. The cat jumped up on the roof, and we had to go get it. And all it did was just—I couldn't go to work.
I got to tell you something, sir. I think you're taking it a little too seriously here.
That's what I thought, but it was the subtlety of saying, "If he wants to call me a queer, just come out and say it." That I respect, but why does he have to say they've approved free sex change operations?
Well, that's not even being gay. That's a transgender thing.
I understand that, but that's what I mean. He's being very roundabout because he hasn't got the guts. And so I said to my attorney that the litigation should include the clause that Include a clause. I'm very nervous.
Include a clause.
Include a clause that says that he, that I am mentally and emotionally, I've basically been mentally and emotionally fondled because he didn't have the guts to just call me a queer.
What will this, well, I don't know if, it, sir, I got to tell you something. It's frivolous.
No, sir, it is not.
Yeah, it's a totally frivolous lawsuit. It's a ridiculous thing to say. You're going to sue this guy because he doesn't have the guts to call you a queer.
That's exactly correct. If the man came out and said, hey, Steve, I think you're a queer, that's fine. But the mental fondlement...
And what is mental fondlement?
I mean, what I'm saying is he emotionally fondled me by not just coming out and calling me a queer.
So instead he said, hey, Steve, Cuba is approving free sex change operations.
That's what he did, and that's his roundabout way. So I'm accusing him in a civil litigation of being too gutless to call me queer to my face, and instead of talking about...
All right, I've got to take a break. I thank you very much, sir, for that input. It's very interesting. My best of luck to you.
Okay, if anybody wants to go to my website...
All right, we'll give that address later on. Thank you.
Sorry, the guy was nuts.
No, you didn't. You didn't tell me he was nuts. You didn't tell me he was that nuts. We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. And that's the part that is devilish about it. And of course, we are radio for patriots, by patriots, every night here. As I mentioned, we're holding forth trying to help you across the sort of a maze, a kind of, I guess you'd say, a swamp of soft, dumb heads. Charlie LaFountain is going to be joining us this hour. Mr. Fountain is a parent and a member of his parent-teacher organization out in the Azusa area of California. He's the father of a 14-year-old girl, and he's going to be joining us next with some controversial ideas on how to dissuade child predators from attacking our kids. This is a ongoing problem. One of the good things about it, though, is that we are now very aware of it, and we're dealing with it head-on, and we're not hiding it, and we're not... we're not as dumb as we used to be. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, the whole McMartin case was an example of mass hysteria just run amok. I mean, it wasn't just that people were beginning to imagine things. They were destroying people's lives and reputations in the process. So hopefully we've gotten a little bit smarter. Reminder that we are online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And you can get a backstage pass and access to our live streaming video of the show every night, Phil TV in HD, as well as our archives, podcasts, and our video archive, a five-day archive of the show, audio as well as video. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. It's probably the best deal you're going to get anywhere on the Internet when it comes to a radio. 877-876-PHIL is the number, and Charlie LaFountain joining us from Azusa, California this evening. And Charlie, thanks for joining us, sir. How are you?
Very good, Phil. Thank you for having me.
And you are, right now, I know you're at some kind of an event.
It is a carnival that we have. It's the beginning of the summer carnival that we put on, the Men's Club here at our church, and I man a booth, and that's what I'm doing. That's what I was doing before I got on the phone with you.
And you have been very vocal in your community. I know that there were, over the past 3 or 4 years, several instances of children being attacked. And we're not talking about necessarily in their homes by their fathers or male or female relatives. We're talking about in the community.
That is, yes. Unfortunately, we had one incident here over the last 8 months, which was quite traumatic for the community, as well as two incidents of a stranger attacking two young kids here. And so we put together some creative ideas and managed ideas that we hope will begin to arm our young people as well as parents to the problem of predators, because this is the summer, and these are the months when the kids are out on the streets. They're doing all of the things the young person wants to do. They're, you know, visiting their friends, or they're riding their bikes, or they're taking the bus, or going someplace, or driving a car. And we have come up with a steps that we feel need to be implemented, and we think that they go contrary, certainly, to the popular wisdom. And so that's what I suppose I'm warning you.
Well, and give me an example.
Well, an example would be we've heard, especially the last few months, we've heard that we've got an obesity problem among children. Well, I have to tell you that that's the least of our worries if we have an obesity problem, because we've also got a children are being attacked and murdered problem. And
now, you're not trying to panic people, are you?
No, I'm not trying to panic anybody, but you're aware, and I'm aware, and I think everyone in your audience is aware, that children are at risk. So when we tell kids that they have an obesity problem and that they must lose weight, what we're telling them is shed the fat, slim down, get into a more healthy regimen, and become more attractive to a child predator, a freak, and a creep.
And well, that's not what we're telling them.
No, it's not what we're telling them, but that's the effect.
And so you're telling me that we need our kids to remain heavy.
What we need is our kids to not to know what are the priorities here. Is the priority keeping the weight off so that somehow you keep the weight off as a kid, so somehow hit your 18th birthday ready to rock and roll? I don't know what that means. Or is the priority keeping the kid alive past tomorrow?
See, to me, that's panic talk. Keeping the kid alive past tomorrow.
I'm telling you, you don't know where these predators are. My daughter is 14 years old. She's a beautiful young lady. She's also an intelligent young girl. And we certainly are very proud of her. But I would much rather she sit down and eat all the pancakes that she wants, have all the donuts that she wants, and put some weight on, and create, if you will, a body type that's not going to be something that looks like eye candy to one of these freaks that goes after children.
And I think you are, it sounds to me like you're missing what being a child predator is about, you know?
Oh, I'm missing it. Well, what do you mean, am I missing what being a child, Mr. Henry? I'm not missing anything. If you want to enlighten me.
Well, I think the psychological dynamic at work here, these people that are doing this are delusional people. They don't even get to what they're doing, I think, in some cases. Well, I think they know it's wrong. I'm not trying to give them an excuse there. But I believe that I don't know, that body type or whatever.
You're saying that you don't think that a predator that wants to target a young girl is going to care whether she is lovely, like my daughter, a lovely young lady, a healthy young lady, or if she has, or if she's fat and she's a little fat kid. You say there's no difference.
I think it's opportunity, you know.
You think, well, Mr. Henry, I have to tell you,
I just think it's opportunity. I think that it doesn't matter if she's slender or if she's fat. If there's an opportunity,
I am telling you, based upon my observations and based upon my instinct as a father who has a young daughter still at home, I'm telling you that I am not going to risk my daughter walking around in the summer months in California, a beautiful, healthy young woman. So one of these guys that get their kicks and their freak with kids can spot her and try to snatch her off the street. I would rather that she is a fat kid, and I know that that's probably not going to... She's 14 years old, so I don't think... Well, she certainly...
Well, that's the other thing. 14-year-old girls are pretty aware of themselves.
I understand that, but they're not if you tell them they look beautiful.
14-year-old girls, it doesn't matter what you say to them, man. They're going to be walking around with their friends. The fact is, you want your daughter fat. Is that what you're saying?
I want my daughter safe. And the way to make her safe is to keep as much fat on her and make her... I am tired of listening to these commercials.
The way to make her safe, then, is to make her unhealthy.
I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that a 14-year-old kid with fat is unhealthy. I don't buy that at all. You pack some fat on a kid, and the kid may live longer than next Tuesday. But
like I said, you don't want to panic anybody.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get the word out to all parents. And
no, but when you say live past next Tuesday, live past next September, you are talking like a panicked man. And
Mr. Henry, we live in the state of California. The summer months are here. You're telling me there aren't guys standing on every street corner whose freak isn't some young, I don't know how these guys think, but they think, they look at a kid and they think it's a tasty deal. I don't know how these freaks think. But if they look at my daughter, what they're going to see, if children to these guys are pieces of fruit on a tree, my daughter is a fat pear that's hanging from a tree. And
so you want to make her a fat kid so that she isn't so attractive. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL.
Well, I didn't say make her unhealthy, but what I am saying is we need to begin to look seriously at how to attack this problem, and let's stop with all of this. We've got an obesity problem with children. What we have right now is a problem that our children are being victimized, and we have to dissuade these predators. We need these kids to stay fat and to stay in the mind of a predator as, as revolting as humanly possible.
Well, I would love to be able to sit down and look at the psychological profile of some of these people and ask them, well, now, this kid is really fat and revolting. Did it make any difference? Are these people, mentally, does it matter to them, And I don't know what happens if we get a call this hour from someone who was attacked as a child and they were fat.
Well, in their mind, they were fat. See, that's the thing. In their mind, you've got a lot of these anorexic kids. They think they're fat. I think we need these kids to be fat for, in reality, fat. To be fat. And then at 17, I think we need to get them to mandatory fat camps so that they can hit their 18th birthday in good shape and be attractive or however they want. But as long as they're underage and they're children, we need for them to be as repulsive and revolting as possible to any weirdo that wants to take advantage of them.
And in your mind, that's keeping them fat.
Keep them fat and don't harp on the whole childhood obesity thing. Keep your kid fat and weird looking. Keep your kid fat and just and I say this with the greatest of love and respect for many parents, but if your kid is sweating, if he's fat and he has a smell about him, keep the child in of all of these things.
That has a smell about him? What do you mean by that?
Well, when I was a kid, and when you were a kid, there was always one kid in the class that smelled, was fat, had, I don't know, oil, it was oily. What is wrong? We always say, well, ha, 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 look at that kid. But you know what? I bet you that kid stayed alive. He lived to see his 18th birthday.
Well, I can tell you that I wasn't fat, I wasn't oily, and I didn't get attacked and molested.
Well, did you walk home from school?
I rode my bike.
You rode your bike? How far did you ride your bike?
Probably about 3 miles.
You know what? I can't talk to you if you're not going to be honest with me.
I'm being honest with you. I rode a bike. I rode my bike home about 3 miles back and forth.
Well, I was in the 1960s. They were not as brazen and as bold, all right? And back in those days, they probably had their pick of the litter. What do they want? Some kid like you, some freckle-faced kid. So we are hopeful that parents will begin to take this message, allow their children to eat. And even if the child becomes a fat and repugnant child, he's only repugnant to a predator. He's not going to be repugnant to you. You love him. And if he sweats and he stinks, that's sweating and stinking to the kids in the school, not you. You understand?
All right, and so we'll give this kid a real great complex as he gets older, as he's made fun of, as he's called fatty, as he's called piggy, as he's told that he smells. That's really going to help, huh?
Would you rather that happen, Mr. Henry, or you find him behind a garbage bin someplace, dead, with his pants pulled?
All right. Unbelievable. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. What do you think about the idea that harping on childhood obesity is a bad thing because if we keep the kids fat, then they don't make such targets for predators. An obese kid dissuades a predator, according to Charlie LaFountain here, on our newsmaker line. And then, of course, the mandatory fat camps at 17. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Your call's next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL.
Hold on.
That's
I want to
877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with me is Charlie LaFountain, a father, member of the men's club out in Azusa at his daughter's, at their church, and you have been talking and setting up a program with other parents having to do with the making the kids unattractive to predators, which basically means keeping them obese, which is what we've been hearing we should not be doing with our kids, that we have an epidemic of obese kids.
Mr. Hendry, again, I if you want me to repeat what I said.
No, I'll tell the audience that essentially your point is it's better for the child to be fat than to be dead, is essentially what you're saying.
That is exactly correct, sir. And I'm not going to, I'm not trying to scare anyone, but I won't back off of that. I would much rather that my daughter live to see the sunrise next Wednesday.
See, everything with you is like right away she's going to die, man. Tomorrow, the next day.
I want my daughter to enjoy her life. And if that means that we are serving, and we do, I can give you, we serve her pancakes for breakfast. She doesn't leave the table unless she eats at least the three-quarters of the pancake dish or a waffle and so forth. We must understand. And I told you, and you laughed during the break, when we were leaving two weeks ago, one of these scout meetings, and I had three or four of the girls in the car, my daughter and three of her friends. I was driving them home from a meeting. We saw this guy hanging around the corner. He looked like a creep. I knew he was one of these child grabbers. Right away, I could tell. And I rolled the window down, and I told him that we got nothing but fat kids in this car, and he's welcome to, if he wants to even walk over and take a look. Of course, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, if you got a guy like that hanging around the neighborhood, why don't you call the cops?
I rolled the window down and I said, I know why you're here, and I got nothing but fat brats in this car.
Now, and how does that make those girls feel?
Are you kidding? I've got a guy who...
Sir, you don't have any idea whether that guy is there to be a predator or not. All I know is you're yelling at some stranger on the street, I got fat brats in this car.
I'm telling him that the fishing's no good. This is not the fishing hole he wants to be at. Move on down the road. Go to another spot.
Victimize somebody else's kid.
No, that's not the message that I'm trying to send is, buddy, we're on to you. And we're on to all the predators out there that are trying to victimize children. I got nothing but fat ones in here. And I told you, Mr. Andrew, we were talking about being a child. The fat kid, the one that smelled like you couldn't describe it when you got home to your parents. Do you remember when you were a kid, you'd get home to talk to your parents, they'd say, how did school go? And you couldn't describe the smell on that one kid.
And no, I don't remember that at all, to be honest with you. 877-876-PHIL. I have to move on to get to a phone call here. Mark, go ahead. You're on. Mark? 876-7445 here on the Phil Hendry Show with Charlie LaFountain, and we're talking with Charlie about his idea that we have obese children. And these children are should not be told to lose weight. They should be told to put the weight on. They should be told to put on as much weight as possible so that they dissuade predators. And what about what we tell women? Don't dress sexy. It only attracts rapists.
I don't know about that, Mr. Henry. I'm not here to talk about women. I'm here to talk about children.
Well, the message is the same. The message is, if you make yourself less attractive, then you won't attract predators. It's the reason why women who are raped become fat, because they don't want it to happen again.
Well, we don't. don't want it to happen the first time. And so in order not to let it happen the first time, we're asking that the parents of these children put the weight on and keep it on and make sure that these kids, as they are eating these meals, whether they are pancake meals, whether they are potato meals, to make sure they finish these meals. And that by, say, 2 or 3 weeks out, you've got a kid that is a fat kid. That's the only way I can put it. An obese child, or however you want to put it.
877-876-PHIL. We got Mark back on the line. We lost him. No, yes, no, yes. No, yes, no, yes, no, yes. No, yes, no, yes. Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
The gentleman out in California, I have four boys. 10, 5, 4,
yes,
and 2. And I'm going to tell
yes,
you,
sir.
Yes, I don't raise my children, and I wasn't raised the same way. We were raised to learn the dangers of the world. We are
absolutely
people.
Absolutely.
But that is exactly what needs to happen. It's an issue of parenting at this point. If you're not teaching your children what to look out for, you are causing more harm than good. You are.
Oh, I want to teach them, but I also don't want them to be walking down the street and they're a target for some freak who sees this.
Predators are going to take the opportunity. If you don't teach your kids the dangers, it doesn't matter if they weigh 5 pounds or 500. They're going to take the easiest opportunity. So by not,
you're telling me that a predator is going to go after a 500-pound kid.
Plenty of airtime. So by
exactly. Why don't I tell you what, Mark? Why don't you hang on the line here? We'll be right back with your number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be back. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And hanging on is Mark. And we also have Charlie the Fountain. Charlie, you were saying it in the break?
Well, I was just saying that my daughter, we want my daughter as fat and, frankly, as unhygienic as possible. We don't let her take that. She takes 2 showers a week. And
so, in other words, you want your daughter to be repulsive to everybody and everything.
If it keeps the child alive...
I know, past next Tuesday.
No, I'm talking about... I don't know, is the gentleman there that I was talking to?
Yeah, Mark is here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You know, wouldn't you rather your child be walking around alive at the age of 18, fat and stinking like a goat?
Well, your church going, there is no guarantee on anybody's life. All you can do is prepare your children for the best way possible. But I'm going to tell you one thing. And it sounds like your heart wants to be in the right place by keeping your kids safe, all what parents want to do. But if your mind was where your heart was, you teach them about the dangers of the world, not about how many pork chops they're going to eat. You're going to teach them about what to look out for. If you guys want to do something to really help your community and the children, you're going to tell them about the dangers. You're going to tell them about what not to do, not to go down the alleyway, not to go anywhere by yourself, not to open the door for strangers. That's what you do. You don't sit there and just say, eat as many pieces as you want to do. That's just, you can't get there from here, and you can't fix stupid. That's all I'm saying.
I think what you're jumping to some conclusions. Of course I do. As I said, when we were leaving that scout meeting, there I saw that guy in the corner, and I said to him, hey, pal, they're fat, and they're with me.
Bet you that made those kids feel great.
No, but I'm saying to the kids, there's one of the creeps right now to hang around here.
Well, let me tell you something. When I was 10 years old, my brother and I and my family was on vacation, and there was a child abductor at the pool where we were at in our hotel. He didn't even belong there. He was part, unfortunately, of the National Guard. That guy shouldn't have been in there. But it wasn't because we were fat. It wasn't because we were an opportunity, because our parents had just went inside for a second and left us there. But they had taught us enough smarts to recognize the situation. And that gentleman was apprehended in Nashville, Tennessee. That's what you do.
Was he able to get a hold of you? Did he take you in the car?
No, he didn't. We wouldn't go. They tried to sweet talk everybody. No, we wouldn't go. That's because our parents taught us the right way.
But let me ask you a question. Here's the $64,000 question, though. How much did you weigh? Were you fat and ugly, or were you a slim down, good looking little morsel?
Come on, will you?
No. God. That's a fair question. Let me tell you, when I graduated, I was 5'6" and 230 pounds.
That sounds about right.
230 pounds at the age of graduated from high school, 18?
Yeah.
230 pounds.
I was obese. The gentleman was out for an opportunity. That's what I'm trying to say.
You were obese. Exactly. You picked up the weight when you found out this creep was going after you.
No, you're not listening to this man.
You cannot get there from here because we can banter all night long. And that's fine. And you're
believe
what you're going to believe, but I'm going to tell you, if you really want to help your children and the children in your community, you're going to show them the right way. You're going to teach them right from wrong. Not about... Don't worry about it. And you talked about fat camps. Really, you're going to give a child 17 years of not doing, having to do anything at all, and then all of a sudden you're going to put them through a boot camp to, you want to kill them at 18 because
you've got to slim them down.
You're not used to it.
Don't you want to, once they've been fat through their childhood years and they haven't been hit on by these predators, then you got to, put them in the fat camp and get the fat off.
Why?
Because they're going to be 18 going to college.
Oh, man. I mean...
Isn't there opportunities to go after 18-year-olds? Anybody can hold a gun. If it doesn't matter how much you weigh, you're going to put that person that gun says.
But it's not my problem.
Right? Now, there's your $64,000 question. How do you fat your way out of that?
How do I fat my way out of that? Or fat my way
you're
out
doing.
Of that? I fat my way out of it by saying that at the age of 18, they're adults. I can't make them do anything. I can't tell them to put on weight, take it off, nothing. So I have to let them do what they're going to do, and they're going to be dumb. You want to know why? Because... they didn't get fat. Forget it.
No, this man's making so much sense that you can't. The man's right. You can't fat your way out of it. Listen, very good, Mark. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that very much. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Charlie DeFountain with us as we talk about the best way to dissuade predators from coming after your kids. And your idea, and it's been described as revolutionary, is essentially just... making the child as physically unappealing. And then you just heard what this man said.
I had no idea how much he weighed. He said that there was a child abductor at the pool that he was at. But I didn't know what the kid looked like, and I don't know whether this guy was going after this kid or not. He said he was fat when he graduated. What I'm saying is we've got too much of an emphasis, far too much of an emphasis on taking off the weight and too much childhood obesity and all of this stuff. We've been talking until we're blue in the face about this. I feed my daughter large meals, big meals. We always sit down as a family and we eat a very large and big meal. We have candy. There's no diet soda. I forbid her to exercise. I forbid my own daughter to exercise. Do you think I do that because I don't love her? Do you think I do that? Do you think I want my daughter to be the fat? And she's fat. There's no question about it. She started out at the age of 14. She was very lovely, but I want that kid fat. And she's fat. And she only is allowed 2 showers a week. That means, yes, she does. She stinks. And
they're going to send her home from school, or they're going to send Child Protective Services out to your place.
No, they're not going to do that.
Well, because if the kid's coming to school fat and stinks, they're going to wonder whether this kid's got any proper hygiene, what kind of a home she comes from.
No, she doesn't stink. I just used, when I said stinks like a goat, it was hyperbole.
You said to that man, would you rather your kid be alive past next week or fat and smells like a goat? What does your daughter smell like, a goat?
No, she doesn't smell like, first of all, I wouldn't know what a goat smelled. Well, we were in Jamaica once on vacation. I never smelled a goat, but I can tell you, I was fed goat stew. And I had a conversation with your producer before we went on the air, Mr. Rance.
Uh-huh.
And he's going on and on about goat stew, and I said, you need a psychiatrist.
All right, enough about him and goat stew. I'm talking about your daughter.
No, my daughter doesn't smell like a goat. But she stinks the way a kid stinks to another kid. In other words, if you go into a classroom as an adult and you smell about 40 kids, smells like a kid, right? In other words, it may not be the most pleasant odor in the world. You know and I know. We all know that kids smell. But to another kid, she may stink like a dead body. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know anything that you're talking about here.
you got to be putting me on.
I know that when I was in school, there were kids that some kids had better hygiene than others. You know.
Well, what did your mother tell you?
I was a skinny kid. Okay? I was a really, really skinny kid.
No, I mean about taking a bath.
I took a bath every damn day, man. I took a shower every day. That's what they wanted me to do. And
did you use deodorant?
Yes, all of that stuff. I was taught to do that. What the hell's wrong with you, man? You're going to teach a kid that?
Of course you are. So what you have to do is do something radical and different. If you want to keep a predator away from your kid, make sure that your kid goes out the door smelling like something that has been dead under the house. And
you got to be kidding me, man. There's no way on God's good green earth that any parent is going to allow that to happen. You're going to have the school after you. You're going to have the school...
Who's going to come after you for what?
Sending a kid off to school like they don't get proper hygiene at home, you're going to have Child Protective Services.
Well, again, I think you're mistaking what I'm saying.
No, I understand perfectly what you're saying, Mr. LaFountain. You're saying make sure the kid is fat, make sure the kid stinks, make sure the kid's oily, make sure the kid is just a real repulsive wad of bleh, you know, going to school, and predators won't go near. And what happens when you're wrong?
When I'm wrong.
Because it's going to be a win. It's not going to be an if. If you allow kids just to, degrade to that level, and then that's the only protection you give them.
I didn't say that's the only protection. Didn't you hear what I said? I told that guy standing on the street corner.
Yeah, that's another thing, man. Telling that guy that you thought was a child. How did you know that guy was a child molester?
I didn't know. I didn't know if he was a child molester. He looked like some bum that was hanging around on the corner who looked like he wanted to put his hands on somebody somehow. I don't know what. But he was hanging around loitering. He looked like a real bum, a real beatnik bum. So as we were pulling out...
A beatnik bum?
You know what I mean. So as we were pulling out, I said to the girls, I said, girls, watch this one. And I rolled the window down, and I said to the guy, I said, hey, bum, I got four of them in here, real ripe but fat. And when I said ripe, I wasn't talking about ripe like a piece of fruit. I said the smell alone. And guess what he did? He turned on his heel and just began walking down the street right out of the neighborhood.
Bull crap!
Are you calling me a liar?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm calling you.
You're saying that that didn't happen.
You're telling me that you looked out the window at some guy...
You know what, Mr. Henry, a very pleasant and profitable good evening to you. And frankly, sir, I hope you die early about it.
Wow! Wow!
What'd he do?
He hung up, but not before he hoped that I die early of a heart attack. If I die of a heart attack there, Mr. LaFountain, it won't be early, man. How do you like that guy?
Yeah, you were laughing at him, though.
You're damn right I was laughing at him. This guy's telling me that he pulls out of some Girl Scout meeting with his daughter and two of her friends, sees some guy standing on the corner, right?
Yeah.
And he looks out the window and he thinks this guy's a child molester and he goes, hey, bum, I got four of them in here, fat and real ripe. And the guy turns around, he claims, this guy that he said, this bum, turns around and walks out of the neighborhood.
Are you kidding me, man? That's a pretty effective tool.
He's not telling the truth. Are you kidding?
I got him on here on line two. I don't know if you want to talk to him or not.
These people always call back after they have... Mr. LaFountain, you hung up on me.
Yes, could I speak with Robert Leonard, please?
Mr. LaFountain, it's Phil Henry, the host of the show.
Yes, sir, I don't want to talk to you. I want to speak to the gentleman who understood me. I just heard a man who understood everything I said.
Yeah, this is my Robert Leonard. And
shut up. You're talking to me. I'm the host of the show.
Yeah, I want to speak to the man that was sympathetic to my point of view.
He wasn't sympathetic. All he said was he believed that this guy turned on his heel and walked out of the neighborhood.
I told you... that I looked at him and I said, hey, bum, there's four fat ripe. I gave the... You were never in the Navy, were you?
No.
I was a signal corpsman, so I did the signal...
Yeah?
I had some Signal Corps flags in the trunk of my car, and I did the signal for four fat and ripe.
Good night.
Good night? That's all you have to say is good night. You know, there is a hell, Mr. Henry. There is a hell. It's real. It's very real. People go there. You'll go there. In fact, you're next.
You know, I'd take that as a threat.
Yeah, I'd sound like it.
I could take that as a threat. You're next. I got the Signal Corps flags out of the trunk of my car.
Yeah, we probably stood behind his car and went, four, right, fat,
How do you know what Signal Corps stuff is?
Well, I mean, I read about it.
That's a guy that's... this guy's off his freaking cracker, man. He's got the flags. Four ripe and fat.
Yeah, and then the guy turned around and split.
Yeah, I'm sure that all happened, man, just the way he said it did. Because Charlie LaFontaine's got it down, man. I got four in here, they're fat and they're ripe. He's doing it with Signal Corps flags, and the dude splits. There's no way, man.
Why don't you believe people, man? How come you're all so cynical?
Robert, there's a difference between being cynical and just a complete and utter imbecile, all right? I'm not going to believe that because only an idiot would believe that.
So you call me an idiot?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. If you believe that, yeah, you are. You're an idiot.
Well.
Uh-huh. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our news and information hour coming up next with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman.
We can't fight this fight alone. You know, give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Where you're going, there's no air conditioning.
The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
All right, we're going to try something, and I don't know. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. One of the people that we use frequently on our program as a contributor is Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell spent 8 years at Atascadero Forensic Hospital for the, it used to be called for the criminally insane. These days they call them forensic hospitals, but he was there. And he was remanded there by the courts after being found guilty of a variety of crimes against children. He is on our Newsmaker Line 3. And, Herb, you there?
I'm right here, Bill, yeah.
All right. And Charlie LaFontaine, Mr. LaFontaine, I thought I'd get you back on the line because I wanted to... wait a minute. That was... we're still got R.C. Collins going? That's nuts. All right. Here is Charlie LaFontaine. Sir, are you there?
I'm here, but I want the record to show that I am going to be talking to a freak, okay? No, there's no need, sir, to be that. No, hold on for a minute. I understand that Mr. Henry says he wants me on the radio with you, and you're a freak of nature. Do you understand that?
I understand you have issues. Yeah.
I have issues, that's right. I've got issues.
All right, but, you know... I thought you two could dialogue.
Don't give me this modern dialogue. I want a dialogue. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me I'm going to get a, what do you call it? Talk about closure? Yeah, they're going to want me to have closure. Is that what you want me to have, closure?
No, I just, all right, the two of you can talk. All right?
Now, here, if I could start off, with all due respect, Mr. Fountain, your daughter, you say, is how old? I'll tell you about my daughter, but I want it to be very clear. If anything happens to my daughter... because of this conversation I'm having with you, you'll look like something they cut down from the roof of Ed Gein's barn. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand, sir, yes.
So as long as we're clear, you'll be gutted, salted, and tanned.
I understand, sir.
Good God. All right, we got it.
Not you. I'm talking to this guy.
All right.
Your daughter's how old? My daughter's 14. And how much does she weigh? Boy, you're full. How much does she weigh? How much your daughter weigh? My daughter weighs 190 pounds.
14 and 190?
Yo, what are you going to do now?
I didn't say anything.
14 and 190 pounds. Yeah. Your daughter's 14 and 190 pounds, and you only allow her to shower how often? Are you getting your jollies or something?
He's asking these questions for a reason.
Oh, I bet he's asking them for a reason. I'm not getting my jollies, as you put it. I just get... There's a method to my madness, if you will. What was your question? I just realized it was sort of a pun that I had. A method to my madness. Because at one time I was mad. You know, very mad. You know. See what I mean? He's going freak on me.
Come on, Herb. Just stick with it, okay?
All right. And how many times a week? My daughter showers twice a week. And what would you say she smells like? What does she smell like? She smells like a compost heap. Like dung. Yes, like dung, like fertilizer. Yeah, she smells most of the time like cow dung.
God!
Take it easy, Mr. Henry, okay? I have here a 14-year-old girl. I'm just taking these notes. A 14-year-old girl. And another thing, I don't like the way you talk. A 30-year-old girl. Why don't you talk like an American, okay? I am an American. Why do you talk, you know...
Come on, Charlie, we're losing time here, and you're nitpicking a bunch of horse dung, okay? Speaking of horse dung, cow dung.
I said cow dung, not horse dung. What's the difference in the stink? I think there's more of a rich and arab... What do you mean, what's the difference? I don't know what the difference is.
All right, just ask the questions.
Well, none of the questions. Here's my comment, and here's my statement to Miss LaFound, this common thing. The child's 14 years of age. She is 190 pounds, means probably 200 pounds by the end of the summer. That is our goal, yes, sir. That is your goal, yes. She smells, as you say, like a compost heap or like a freshly laid cow patty. I didn't say anything about being laid, okay?
He didn't say a freshly dumped cow patty.
Right. So, I forgot that. She sweat? Yes, she sweats profusely. Yeah, probably sweats like a pig, you say? Sweats like a farm animal. Yeah, like a racehorse. Well, I can't see anything wrong with that. Yeah. Why, you lousy... that's it. I'd like to know where you live. I'm not telling you where I live. All I'm telling you is I don't see anything wrong with that.
Oh, man.
Where does he live, Mr. Henry?
You know what, Herb? I didn't know you were going to come on here and bait the guy.
Like barbecue to me. Mr. Henry, I demand that you tell me where this guy lives.
I can't and I won't, okay?
You won't. You're not doing it. I get me some barbecue sauce on something like that. Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Henry. What up? Let me ask you a question. You sure you like girls?
We had to cut out of that because what happened was a lot of foul language ensued and we just dumped. I hope you'll forgive me, ladies and gentlemen.
Boy, that guy LaFountain, what do you think gonna do?
He's gonna just have to sit there and stew in his own anger, man. I ain't telling him where Herb is. And I do want to get Herb back on the line and tell him that's the last time I have him on the air.
You're kidding?
No, I'm not kidding because he purposefully set that guy up to bait him and to piss him off. That's the last time he uses my show to do that. We'll be back with our News and Information Hour next with Robert and Bud here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Yeah!
Phil Henry Show.
We weren't on any mission particularly. We were just looking to pass on.
I've got other things to do, to be quite frank with you, for my constituency.
Okay, so who's fighting there?
He called, himself called, as posting a ring.
Bring out the home.
Hey, welcome to world-famous Phil Henry Show here every night at 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And on this program, folks, we take you through a little bit of a looking glass, a little bit of a Alice in Wonderland type view of the news and of events and of issues. And tonight we're going to talk in our final hour here about American Idol. We don't do a whole lot of discussion of this kind of specific cultural event unless it has something to do with family. And of course, what is television but an event, a television? It's a utility that we often will use with our family. So we'll have Marilyn Donnelly joining us in just a moment to talk with us about American Idol. She's an advisor, a school advisor, works as a teaching advisor and assistant, and she also represents the Education Alliance for taking American Idol off the air, the Education Alliance for Responsible Television Programming, I think is what it's called. So we'll talk with her in just a second. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And coming up later on in the program, a top UN climate official is resigning, and the National Enquirer is officially in the running for the Pulitzer. Before we talk with Marilyn, we're going to listen to the American Idol most recent round of judging. Most recent round of, I suppose it's, you know, seeing who makes the cut and who doesn't. Here is Angela Martin, and she is a contestant. She finds out if she's made it to the top 24 from Judge Cara DeJardi, I think is her name.
You are so special and improved so much, don't we, guys?
Yes.
Right? We really do. You have shown such incredible growth this year. I can tell you worked so hard at everything. It has been so difficult to pick 12 girls. Look at me. I'm sorry. You didn't make it. Listen, you are a great singer. You know what? There are other ways to do it, and you've got it in you. Right, guys, we want to encourage her to keep going.
You got to keep going. You got to keep going.
You are a star no matter what, let me tell you. Oh. You're one of the bravest people I've ever met. One of the bravest. And I'm going to remember you.
Marilyn Donnelly now with us from the Education Alliance for Responsible Television. Now, you heard that. That was Angela Martin finding out if she's going to make it to the top 24. And you take exception to that, as do other members of your organization, right?
We absolutely do, Phil. And the sadism that you just heard demonstrated in that moment from that television show is exactly exemplary of why our children are in danger watching a program like that, and the young people that are auditioning on that program also equally in danger. That was a sadistic demonstration of the pull of that television program by that judge, who I don't blame personally. I find that those individuals are under obvious direction from the producers. One of whom, though, is Simon Cowell.
Now, Simon Cowell is a producer on that show. And you are saying that the producers of American Idol are intentionally sadistic.
I think the marching orders of the day, I think they enjoy telling these young people that they didn't make the cut. They couch it in a very maternal kind of feel. The language is familial. It is the language that a mother might use with a child. And you heard that one sound. I thought that was the singular, most irresponsible, most insulting, and most abusive audio that I've ever heard in my life from that program.
All right, we'll play it one more time so people can hear what it is you're talking about.
You are so special and improved so much.
Now, you can listen to this woman. And you hear the other judge, who is the man.
I can tell you worked so hard.
And they're building her up. And this is where they really get their thrills.
To pick.
Picking, building them up.
12 girls.
Telling her how great she is.
Look at me.
Now, this is where she wants her to look at her so she can really get...
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
She's enjoying that.
You are
all right.
A great
she just told
singer.
The girl... I'm
no,
sorry.
Yes, she just told that young, very vulnerable and very impressionable child, I'm sorry you didn't make the cut. Phil, what is significant in that piece of audio is just before she tells this child that she didn't make the cut, she says, look at me, look at me.
Now, what do you think that, are you saying she wants that girl to look at her so she can get additional enjoyment?
So she can have the enjoyment of looking at that child's face as she says, you didn't make it, and watch the crestfallen look on that child's face, look at the body language slump, look at the tears begin to flow. And Mr. Hendry, this is the most insidious of all facts about that program. They do it for no other reason than their personal enjoyment and their sadistic gratification.
No, Marilyn, you said, though, that the producers want them to do this. Is this not something that they do for ratings?
Well, there is no real empirical data on whether this helps them with their ratings or not. To tell them that they don't make the program may or may not get them ratings, but they enjoy so much telling a young person that they're not going to be on American Idol, that their dreams will not be fulfilled, that they're not as good as the other young people, and that's very significant. To be able to look at a child, when you're an individual like this Kara woman, or this Jackson, or this Simon Cowell, and you relish the sadistic delight of telling a 14, 15, or younger, or even older, 20-something person that they're not good enough. When you relish and you luxuriate in the sadism of that, it is almost as if you are sampling wines from the Cote de Rhone Valley or Mendocino.
Oh, that, Marilyn, what you're saying, you know...
Or any of the newer Zinfandels, the white Zins from Oregon, yes. It's like wine tasting.
All right, what you're saying is there's no reason for American Idol to drag out telling these children, these young people, I say children, I mean these are adults, that they've made it onto American Idol other than the sadistic delight of this woman, Cara DeGiardi, or the other judges on this program. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And that's why we are, and Phil, we are being very clear about this. We are asking, and we're asking now, there's been an awful lot of discussion on the Internet about demands of the government, demands that the government do this or that or else. Well, we are demanding that American Idol be taken off the air. We can no longer stomach looking at sadists like this Jackson, this DeGiardi, this Cowell, delighting in the disappointment, the almost suicidal disappointment of a young person. And let me tell you something else. We already know that one young contestant killed herself in front of Paula Abdul's home.
All right, we know that, yes.
Today we saw an example of a mind that had eventually and with finality come apart. And the individual in possession of that mind, or who had possession of that mind, before he got into that airplane, was a man who eventually flew an airplane into a building, killing himself, one other person, and injuring others. We witnessed that today, Phil.
Right.
If American Idol continues to toy with the feelings of young people, ghoulishly and sadistically getting some kind of a perverse thrill out of telling a young person, you didn't make it. All these other people did, but you didn't. If they continue, you're going to see a lot more burning buildings on television.
That's very dramatic.
I have no doubt. I'm an educator, and I've been an educator now for 20 years. You're going to see a lot more burning buildings on television. And then I'd like to see the look on this woman, Cara DeGiardi's face. Then I'd like to see the look on the African-American gentleman's face. Then I'd like to see the look, the smug look on Simon Cowell's face after he sadistically got his thrills telling a young contestant, no, you don't get to have your dreams fulfilled. You must go home now knowing that we don't like you. I'd like to see the look on his face when that child, instead of going home, goes to that pilot school in Arizona and learns how to take a plane off but not land it. And I'm sorry...
That's really very extreme, and I'd like you to, you know...
No, I'm very sorry, Mr. Henry. I don't want to have to talk about this.
But when we come back, I want you to back this stuff up, because, look, we're all concerned with the well-being of our children. You're saying something here that is brutally frank.
Mr. Henry, I do not delight in putting it this way. We have got to get this program off the air.
Is there any way that they could put it so that they wouldn't be so sadistic?
There, you cannot change the spots on a leopard. I've seen this Cara DeGiardi. I've seen her up close. I've seen her in person. She has the look of a jungle predator. She has the look of a sadist. And I know that look. And the same with the African-American.
Mr. Jackson, what is his name? Jackson, right. And Cowell?
And Cowell, yes.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Marilyn Donnelly. Ms. Donnelly is with educators for the Education Alliance for Responsible Television. And the question we have here, should American Idol be taken off the air because the people who are rejected could turn violent? American Idol, according to our guest, rejects people with such a sadistic glee. In other words, they are so sadistic with their enjoyment of watching kids who are disappointed and who will not be on the program. Are they turning these kids violent and into the next Joe Stacks? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you. I thought that went well.
Hold on.
Phil Hendry.
With me is Marilyn Donnelly. Ms. Donnelly is an advisor. She's a student advisor, school advisor, teacher advisor, and she also is a member of the Educational Alliance for Responsible Television. And Ms. Donnelly, you've made it very clear you think American Idol needs to be pulled off the air. You're talking about a level of sadism, meaning that people enjoy seeing the pain of others among the judges. DeGuardi, I think is her name.
And Randy Jackson.
Randy Jackson, Simon Cowell, you're saying that they enjoy watching these children suffer.
I absolutely do, Phil. And the other piece of audio that I think you should hear is of this young contestant by the name of Thaddeus Johnson. You are going to hear a level of sadism that I don't think you've ever heard on national television from an adult to a child. That's the most disturbing part. It is one thing to say that a child doesn't win a contest, or an adult doesn't win a contest. But to sadistically, with cruelty and malice aforethought, revel in the pain and anguish of a child, I think it takes the program American Idol to a new depth of depravity, really, that I don't think I'd ever see a television program, or for that matter, any platform, lower itself to.
All right, here is Thaddeus Johnson, as he is told. And you'll hear him in a various stages of this competition that he doesn't make the show. Thaddeus Johnson, and his mother was there, too.
Thaddeus, you didn't make it. And I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything wrong this
now,
week.
Now, watch as they drag it out. Watch as they drag it out.
Thank you. Just a lot of people. Hard time to decide.
Come on, chin up. Chin up.
They said I did great. And I did nothing wrong. But I don't understand how you can do great and do nothing wrong and still get let down. I just thought it was my time. Right. They asked him during Hollywood Week. They told me that I was great. They
lied to him, in other words, Phil. You hearing that?
Yes, I am.
Listen to this poor child. And Simon Cowell, don't make any mistakes. Simon Cowell thinks this is thoroughly entertaining and funny.
You think Simon Cowell is listening to this and laughing?
I have no doubt in my mind at all. He thinks it's so funny.
They said there was nothing wrong with me.
Randy Jackson, who should have some empathy. This is a brother.
Stop it. Stop
Randy Jackson it. Is probably howling with laughter.
I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that they're howling with laughter.
Phil, I'm telling you, I've been around children for a long time, and I've seen the effects of sadistic adults on children. And this child, by the way, this boy was also very overweight, and this hardship can't be good for his heart. I don't think that American Idol and Mr. Cowell at all, to be honest with you, I don't think they would be overly disappointed if that child, on top of crying and feeling brutally disappointed, had a heart attack right in front of America and died. And
I know you know what it is you're talking about. I don't know the principles. I find that so hard to believe.
And died. And you may find it hard to believe, but I believe with every fiber of my being that if that child died of a heart attack after weeping that he did not make American Idol, Randy Jackson, the black judge, who should have some empathy, would be spitting up with laughter, howling, with the driver's door of his Rolls Royce open out onto Sunset Boulevard and him spitting to try to clear his throat.
That is a that's an indictment.
I know what it is.
That is an indictment that I think you're going to have a hard time backing up. Were you ever to be sued for saying those things? Amber in Mobile, Alabama. Go ahead, Amber.
There's no way they can sue me.
I don't know. Amber, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Marilyn Donnelly.
I was actually calling to tell Miss Mary to that it's okay for her to turn the channel. And it's okay for her to not have her kids watch it, or herself, or her husband. And it's okay for her to even tell others not to watch American Idol. But to demand that a show be pulled because it's satanical or sadistical, or, let me use her words, luxurious. What did you say?
I don't know. I don't even know what the word sadistical is. You made up a word there.
As did you with the whatever you put on the end of luxury. But the bottom line is the word called luxuriant.
No, I'm going to give you the word because it's called luxuriant, or to luxuriate in something is to enjoy it almost obscenely.
Well, thank you very much.
I believe that's what they were doing.
Okay. So, and I'm sure that that's your opinion, and I respect you for that. But what I wanted to offer you was
I think after you hang up, you're going to tell me to go to hell.
Oh, Ms. Donnelly, don't be.
If I was going to do that, I would tell you that on the phone. Now, anyway, what I was going to say is that we have created a society of individuals for the last couple of generations that have absolutely zero coping skills. It's like they started at T-ball where there's no winners or losers. They don't keep scores, so everybody's great. Well, that's not the truth. And if we can start rearing our children like it used to be in the old days, the survival of the fittest. And
well, then you're agreeing
hard,
with
and,
me.
And when you work well, hard, you
then
reap
you're agreeing
the rewards. When you plant
this woman
the,
doesn't understand,
Phil,
that I'm an educator.
Hold on. I will answer your question. I will answer your question.
Well, I'm not answering a question. I have nothing to learn from you. I'm the
you
educator.
Do not.
Will you let the
oh,
lady,
you think
please?
So?
Yes, I have. You know nothing of my life. I am
as,
the educator.
As you do of nobody else's.
Let me offer you this. Children are going to fly planes into buildings. Do you understand what it is I'm warning against?
No, it's not the problem
you saw
that
what happened
children are flying planes in the buildings. It's the problem that the parents didn't set the right expectations in the first place of these children.
Did you hear what you
That's
just said?
The
you
problem.
Said flying flames into you said
no,
flying
I said
flames
plane.
Into the building. No,
That's
you said
right.
flying flames.
No,
planes.
I heard her say planes.
No, she wanted Thank to you. Say planes, but she said flying flames.
She said okay. flying planes.
How can we expect our children to have confidence when
because
we
you rear
laugh
them in confidence,
them,
you celebrate their successes, and you correct where they fail. You show them how to do things better when they don't do it properly, but you don't say, oh, you did that great when they did it completely wrong. You don't.
Is your name Amber?
And you don't,
your name is Amber,
and you don't
right?
put them through in a contest when they weren't the best.
Well,
that's the whole point of a contest.
So you agree with adults being sadistic with children? Do you think they should be tough enough to take it? Do you? That's what you're saying?
No,
that
I don't
what,
agree
that's exactly
with
what you're
sadistic
saying.
With children, but I do believe in adults being honest with children. And I think that's really what's
lacking in our
society.
I agree with that.
With adults,
lack of honesty
children.
With our children.
I hate to see you teaching a class. Phil Hendry. With handsome young 14-year-old boys in it.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Marilyn Donnelly. She is with the Education Alliance for Responsible Television, calling for the television program American Idol to be taken off of the air for what she calls the sadistic treatment, the intentionally sadistic treatment of the contestants on that show. Now, I have that first cut, Marilyn. You wanted to listen to it again?
I wanted to listen again, Phil, to the contestant, Angela Martin.
Yeah, that's the one.
All right. Now, listen very carefully. You'll hear this DeGuardi woman, who is the judge. You will hear her relishing that moment, sadistically relishing the moment, as if she is a judge at a some kind of a seafood festival. Relishing the moment that she tells this child, Angela Barton, that she isn't good enough. The reason why Miss DeGuardi wanted to take the lead on this, because the other judges can do it, but she insisted that she tell this child because she knew this child suffers from a Bell's palsy. In other words, one part of her face has a paralysis. And
You're telling me that this DeGuardi woman...
Let me finish. Ms. DeGuardi wanted to tell this child who had Bell's palsy, guess what? You didn't make it. And then you can see the look in DeGuardi's eyes as her eyes dart back and forth, taking in, soaking in the humiliation, the hurt, the pain, the almost the violence that is swirling inside this child as she recognizes it was good DeGuardi all the time. She knew that moment was coming.
Angela Martin knew she was going to be told no.
I think so. I think that she knew that DeGuardi had that viciousness in her. And even though that poor child at times tried to go to her face with her hand to push the lip up or to do something, she knew that DeGuardi had it in for her. So let's listen to that.
All right, here is Angela Martin being told by Karen DeGuardi she doesn't make the cut.
You are so special and improved so much.
You hear the lies. You hear the lies right away.
You really do. You have shown such incredible growth this year.
You hear her lying?
I can tell you.
I don't know if she's lying.
Everything.
I can assure you.
It has been so difficult to pick.
Well, she's really enjoying this.
12 girls.
Budget. Here it is.
Look at me.
Look at me so she can look at the drooping face and the Bell's palsy.
I'm sorry. You didn't make it. Listen.
Now, do you see the sadism?
You know what? There are other ways to do it.
Listen to her. Now she's dragging it out. Lying to the child that there's
my
other ways to do it.
To
why don't you? Why isn't it possible, Ms. Donnelly? Why isn't it possible that she's telling the child, you know, you really are a star?
No, it's not. If you saw this kid's face,
and I'm going to remember you.
Listen to the lies. And the other part, of course, Phil, that it's very difficult for us to understand at the Alliance, knowing that later on, after the show was over, Ms. DeGuardi most likely asked to see the tape again. And sat there in her stocking feet in one of those elevated director's chairs, eating some yogurt that was brought to her from Kraft Services, and laughing yet again at that moment that she looked into that child's eyes and said, you don't get to. And the poor child, now unable to hold that paralyzed face in place, weeping.
Have you talked to any of the people from American Idol?
No, I won't talk to them, and I know they won't talk to me. No, we are judging this objectively from video of the show.
Because I think it would do a lot of good if you could, you know?
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to give them the benefit of the trying to finesse us and entertain us. No way. Mm-mm.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have Rick in Chicago. Rick, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Marilyn Donnelly. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, thanks, Phil, for taking the call.
Yes.
Hey, I just want to say that I think that lady's accusations about American Idol and the judges is absolutely ridiculous. American Idol's a competition. In the competition, you got winners and you got those that don't. It's like a sporting event. You know, you got people that make the team, you got them that don't. You're telling me people that don't make the team are going to jump on an airplane and run into a building?
No, I didn't say that. I said people that are sadistically treated when they don't make the team. People, young people, let's remember who we're talking about here. We're talking about children.
Children that don't make the team and are sadistically told,
you don't get here. You know, it's stretched out. They make a big deal out of it. They tell them they're great. You heard that little boy being lied to by Cowell and his Confederate jacket.
Lied to?
Saying,
wait.
Oh, you're great. You're great.
The competition.
And then
the told final.
That little boy, no, you aren't great. You stink.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
It's funny. I think it's amazing that you find it funny. I can't believe
it. It's a show. American Idol is entertainment. It is a show.
Yes, of course, it's entertainment. And we use children. Yes, you're absolutely right. And part of the entertainment is to humiliate children.
I'm sure I'm not the only one, obviously, because look at the viewer ratings on this show that disagree with you.
What difference does it make? All right, so I don't know that that's true at all. I think that people are sadistic in their need to see a child suffer. And you know that in America, there's no country in the world where we love to humiliate a child as much as we do in America.
Wait. Hold on. What is that supposed to mean?
We love to. We
now
love
she's degrading our country.
This man has done nothing but laugh, and the reason why he laughs, he thinks it's funny, the idea of children being humiliated.
No, I think the idea that. I think that the comments you're making is hilarious.
I'll tell you something. I can only hope that a child that has lost out on American Idol boards a Cessna and flies it into whatever it is you call a workplace.
Oh, man. Wow.
You know, my daughter,
considering
my daughter,
we just had that happen today, you know.
No, well, I'm sorry. If he wants to laugh about it, then
my daughter.
I hope your daughter's at home with you at the time.
Well.
My daughter's been in competitions, and she's not always won them.
But I stood
behind her, and I showed her just keep going and keep trying. Because you know what? That's what life's about, winning and losing.
All right. And
you
if,
don't
and
always win,
a competition
man.
That I was judging, and I said to her,
strong. You're building.
And I said to your daughter, I said, dear, you know, you're really great, but guess what? You haven't got it. Get out of here. You and your old man.
And she's been told that. Maybe
she's
been told that, but you know what? She kept going. And she's still going.
I would say to her, you haven't got enough voice to call the cattle home.
Ma'am, I'm glad you're my daughter's teacher. Thank you, Phil.
Well, you know what? You're happy, but you laugh at other children that are treated that way.
All right. Thank you very much, Rick. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to another phone call here. We got Janet in Pensacola. Janet, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I don't know if this woman is for real because she sounds so wacky. This is ridiculous. Since there's been show business.
Excuse me, I don't find children
being
laughed at.
Since there's been show business, ma'am, there has been rejection. Rejection is part of show business. No one forces these young adults. You let me speak, ma'am. No one forces these young adults to audition for American Idol. Actors, actresses, everyone in show business goes through rejection. They say there's a broken heart for every light on Broadway. It's part of show business.
Excuse me. It's part
of life.
Every light on
there's
Broadway.
Been an Arthur Godfrey talent contest. The competition is the American way.
Let's
it's
keep
part
it
of
in
life.
The 21st century.
And if you can't take the rejection, then don't audition. Don't go up for it.
Well, I don't think you know much about show business.
I surely do, ma'am.
I was in show business.
You know nothing about it. You're a wet job.
What do you know about show business? What, were you some old blister on the stage in Las Vegas?
I don't have to go into it. I'm just telling you that. And I'm sure Mr. Henry will agree with me that he's gone through rejections in his broadcasting career.
Well, Mr. Henry has gone through more rejections than just
broadcasting. No, you don't have to say that. Everyone has.
But
what's the point of that to humiliate me, Ms. Donnelly?
I'm sure you've been rejected in more ways than just broadcasting. I'm sure with that face.
You know, Ms. Donnelly, I'm not attacking you personally. I'm not talking about you.
All right, well, then let's talk about the lady on the phone, Janet. She's trying to tell me she's been in entertainment.
No, I never said that.
Yes, you said you were in show business.
No, I never said that, ma'am. Okay, I studied theater. I studied acting at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City. My father was an operatic tenor. I know a little bit about show business, ma'am. And I'm telling you, if you can't take the rejection and interrupt the take, get out.
You've never been in that situation.
Not everybody can take the rejection.
Well, her
and
father
if you
was
can't
in that
take it, get out. No one forces these young adults to audition.
Your poor father
and no
wasted
one's doing
that money
it.
On your education.
What?
How do you feel about your father wasting all that money on your education?
How do you figure her father wasted it?
She wasn't professional. I love the theater. It wasn't wasted.
Did you work as an actor? Did you work professionally in the theater?
I couldn't
with the language, okay, please?
Mr. Henry, I don't care about Janet, me, you. I'm talking about children that go in front of Simon Cowell, overweight, fat, African-American children. Now, let's remember who we're talking about. Fat, black children who are then rejected. Mr. Cowell takes that tape home, gets comfortable into a bathing suit or some kind of a dressing robe, and laughs hysterically as he watches it over and over again. This is what Janet and you think is fine. I don't.
They're not doing it sadistically, ma'am. That's in your warped mind.
Janet, I know that you were, for just a moment there, you were remembering back on when they told you, get lost. Right?
Well, they don't even say it like that. They don't even say it like that.
Well,
they say next.
How do they say it?
They say next, and then go on. They don't have time for that.
Did you ever bawl like a baby and say, oh, please?
Of course. It's horrible. It's horrible, but no one forced me to go to that audition. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's painful, but it's life.
Your father forced you. You wanted his approval.
No, my father didn't force me. That's what I wanted to do.
But you wanted his approval as an operatic tenor. You wanted to be him. You wanted to be like him, didn't you?
No.
Your father did that to you. Yes, he did.
No.
And
no,
what are we doing here? Psychoanalyzing people? I'm talking about these kids on American Idol. and you're talking about a boy.
That fat little black boy is what Simon Cowell watches as he's sticking a spoon into a jar of peanut butter.
Uh-huh. All right, Janet. Hey, Janet, thank you for a very interesting story about your coming up in the entertainment business. Here is Joe on the Phil Hendry Show. Joe, go ahead.
Listen, that American Idol.
She had no experience in the entertainment business.
I understand. Go ahead, Joe.
American Idol is completely about making money. It has nothing to do with proper behavior, good behavior. It's all about making money. It's a phenomenon. It just beat the Olympics the other day in ratings. It beat the Olympics. And so
I understand that. And they're doing it by humiliating children and sadistically manhandling them.
That's your opinion. That's your opinion, and you may be right. You may be right.
Did
you
hear that child crying? Did you hear the child crying?
No, I did not hear the child crying.
All right, listen, please, Mr. Hendry.
She didn't make it.
Well, I can't play the whole thing.
You're going to play the whole thing
this week, genuinely.
Thank you.
Just a lot of people, hard time deciding.
Come on, chin up. Chin up.
That little boy was weeping as Simon Cowell was holding back a laugh.
That's the way it goes.
Oh, you can't say that.
That's the way it goes.
You can't say
it's a life lesson for this person. We're going to cry a lot in our lifetime.
Yeah.
We're going to cry a lot in our lifetime.
You know, we were talking about this, Marilyn, yesterday. Simon Cowell, I told you, is my hero. I mean, I love the fact that he tells these children straight up, or these young people straight up, you stink, this is not the business for you. If more kids had been told that down through the years, we wouldn't have a glut of entertainers and a lack of mathematicians, scientists.
Oh, don't give me that speech.
Exactly. He's right.
No,
if we can tell these kids honestly, you don't belong in this business. Go back home and do something that you are great at. We wouldn't have these heartbreak stories.
That's right.
Instead, now, what we're going to have are children climbing aboard Cessnas and finding a building to fly into, just like Joe Stack.
Right. No, that's
get a load of him. No, get a load of him laughing. No, I hear Fort Lauderdale laughing.
I'm not laughing. What makes your opinion better than Simon Cowell's or Phil Hendry's or mine? What makes your opinion better than ours?
Were you raised more properly
than us?
Are you denying that that isn't a sadistic demonstration, dragging it out and then telling the child you didn't make it, and the child cries, and they show the crying, and the humiliation?
Listen,
I can hear you. You're going like this.
We heard it once. Go ahead.
It's interpretation. You can conceive of it that way. A lot of people feel that it's ridiculous for horror on television. You know, blood and guts and horror movies, etc. And so
it's up to
the parent to say, turn the TV off, Tommy.
Exactly. And the other thing is, these are not children, Marilyn. These are adults.
Oh, barely adults.
I don't care if they're barely adults. At some point, you become an adult, and you are legally responsible for your affairs, and you are of a majority age, and you have to go out into the world, and you have to just take a big bite out of the world.
Well, let me tell you something, Phil. The world is a big do sandwich, and you're telling all of us to take a bite.
I'm not telling all of us to take a big do sandwich.
What?
That's what it is.
It's a big do sandwich?
Crap. Yeah, and we all got to take a bite.
Phil.
Good day to you.
Phil, you've got to get
all right,
some
guests. Thank you very much, Joe. And we'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. The world is a big do sandwich, and we all got to take a bite. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I said a big crap sandwich. I want to...
Am I still on?
And no, you're not.
Okay, thank you.
The story, big generation gaps in work attitudes revealed. Now, a lot of people are going to read this article and they're going to think the logical thing. Well, it's not logical. They're going to think the predictable thing. Boy, this younger generation, they sure are lazy. New survey research announced today suggests large generational gaps exist, particularly when it comes to work attitudes. Work attitudes. The findings reveal young people just entering the workforce, often called the Gen Me or the Millennials, or at one time they were called the Gen Ys, are more likely than their elders to value leisure time over work and to place a premium on rewards such as higher salaries and status. Now, results of the new research suggested vacation and other leisure time have increasingly become important over time, with Gen Me placing significantly greater emphasis on it relative to the other two generational groups. Twice as many people in Gen Me rated having a job with more than 2 weeks of vacation very important. Just 23% of boomers agree that work is just making a living, compared with 34% of Gen Me respondents. Three-quarters of boomers said they expected work to be a central part of their lives, compared with 63% of Gen Me respondents. Just making a living, boomers don't see it that way. But the Gen Me'ers do. And the Gen Me'ers see work as not that central a part of your life. So what is that saying? They say two things. The Gen Me people, the millennials, are taking what one would call their life's passions or their loves, and they're exercising them more outside the bounds of their work. Their work is something that they do to provide the means for the expression of the rest of their life. And their work is also something that they can do because we live in the day and age of the telecommute, because we live in the day and age of the long-distance commuter and the computer commuter and all of these other things, that they are able to make their own hours. They can condense them or expand them as they see fit. And the employer doesn't care as long as the job gets done. So the job is secondary to the life, whereas with my generation, the job and the life were the same thing. Now, I got to tell you, there's things that I really dig about how Gen Me people look at their jobs, and there's things that I kind of like about mine. I know how many families and how many marriages have been destroyed by my job is my life, because that's a really all-consuming thing. I mean, you will suddenly find yourself doing nothing but your work. It's your escape. It's your solace. It's your mistress. It's your wife, in the case of, you know, being a man. So that can really wreak havoc with a family. There's an old saying that for an artist, the family is death. Can you imagine that? For an artist, family is death. Which, well, that doesn't need any explanation. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. What a Gen Me person is saying, and maybe Gen Xers to a degree, is they're saying, I'm not going to wreck my life with my work. My work is going to be a means by which I can carry out the expression of the rest of my life. And my work, by the way, is something that I will do in such a way so as to leave as much of my life free to me as I can. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because when your life is open to you and you have ways of you have more time to think and explore and create, I see it as a function of Gen Me'ers having been raised by boomers, looking at the way they get burned out on their jobs, looking at the way it destroys a family or it can destroy a marriage, and saying, that isn't going to be me, man. I am not going to work till 11 o'clock at night and not see my family and not have a life. So it's like, to me, I take it as an evolution. I sure as hell don't think it means people are getting lazier. That is not, there's one thing that we're not, we're not lazy. Dumb? Okay. But lazy?
Oh, so everything you said was bitching until then. You think we're dumb?
I think that we've been smarter as a country. Let me put it that way, okay? Don't take it so personal, bud.
Phil Hendry.